Prologue 2. Germany, 1935. Shortly after midnight, the dogs began to howl along a swath of countryside between the city of Hamburg and the North Sea. Terrified canines stared at the black, moonless sky with lolling tongues and shivering haunches. Their keen hearing had picked up what human ears could not, the faint whir of engines from the giant silver-skinned torpedo that slithered through the thick layer of clouds high above. Four Maybach 12-cylinder engines, a pair on each side, hung in streamlined housings from the bottom of the 800-foot-long airship. Lights glowed in the oversized windows of the control car near the front of the fuselage. The long, narrow control car was organized like a ship's pilot house, complete with compass and spoked steering wheels for the rudder and elevators. Standing next to the helmsman, feet wide apart, arms clasped behind his back, was Captain Heinrich Braun, a tall, ramrod straight figure impeccably dressed in a dark blue uniform and a tall peaked cap. Cold had seeped into the cabin and overwhelmed its heaters, so he wore a thick turtleneck sweater under his jacket. Braun's haughty profile could have been chiseled from granite. His rigid posture and silver hair, cropped close to his scalp, military style, and the slight elevation to his jutting chin recalled his days as a Prussian naval officer. Braun checked the compass heading, then turned to a portly middle-aged man whose bushy, upturned mustache made him resemble a good-natured walrus.
"Well, Herr Lutz, we have successfully completed the first leg of our historic journey."
Braun had an elegant, anachronistic way of speaking.
"We are maintaining our goal of 120 kilometers per hour. Even with a slight headwind, fuel consumption is exactly as calculated. My compliments, Herr Professor."
Hermann Lutz looked like the bartender in a Munich beer cellar, but he was one of the most highly skilled aeronautical engineers in Europe. After his retirement, Broad had written a book suggesting airship service across the pole to North America. At a lecture promoting his book, he'd met Lutz, who was trying to raise money to fund a polar airship venture. The men were drawn to each other by their firm belief that airships could promote international cooperation. Lutz's blue eyes danced with excitement.
"My congratulations to you, Captain Braun. Together we will advance the greater glory of world peace."
"I'm sure you mean the greater glory of Germany," sneered Gerhard Heinz, a short, slight man who had been standing behind the others, close enough to hear every word. With great ceremony, he lit up a cigarette. In a steel-tipped voice, Braun said, "Herr Heinz, have you forgotten that above our heads are thousands of cubic feet of highly flammable hydrogen? Smoking is permitted only in the section so designated in the crew's quarters."
Heinz mumbled an answer and snuffed out the cigarette with his fingers. Attempting to gain the edge, he drew himself up like a preening rooster. Heinz had shaved his head to the skin and affected a pince-nez for his nearsighted eyes. The pale white head was perched on narrow shoulders. While the effect was supposed to be intimidating, it was more grotesque. Lutz thought that, with his tight black leather overcoat, Heinz looked like a maggot emerging from its pupa, but he wisely kept his thoughts to himself. Having Heinz on board was the price he and Broad had had to pay to get the airship into the air. That, and the aircraft's name, Nietzsche, after the German philosopher. Germany was struggling to get out from under the financial and psychological yoke imposed by the Treaty of Versailles. When Lutz had proposed an airship voyage to the North Pole, the public had been eager to contribute funds, but the project had stagnated. A group of industrialists quietly approached Lutz with a new proposition. With military backing, they would fund an airship to make a secret trip to the North Pole. If the mission succeeded, it would be made public, and the Allies would be presented with a fait accompli that displayed the superiority of German air technology. Failure would be kept a secret to avoid a black mark. The airship was built undercover, Lutz patterning it on the huge airship Graf Zeppelin. As part of the deal, he agreed to take Heinz along on the expedition to represent the interests of the industrialists.
Captain, would you enlighten us as to our progress? Lutz said.
Braun stepped over to a chart table. Here is our position. We will follow the course taken by the Norge and the Italia to the Spitzbergen Islands. From there, we will make the dash to the pole. I expect the last leg to take about 15 hours, depending on weather.
I hope we have better luck than the Italians,
Heinz said, unnecessarily reminding the others of previous airship attempts to reach the pole. In 1926, the Norwegian explorer Amundsen and an Italian engineer named Umberto Nobile had successfully reached and circled the pole in an Italian dirigible named the Norge. However, Nobile's second expedition in the sister ship known as the Italia was supposed to have landed at the pole, but it had crashed. Amundsen had been lost in a rescue attempt. Nobile and some of his men were finally rescued.
It is not a question of luck, said Lutz. This airship's design built on the mistakes of others, precisely with this mission in mind. It is stronger and better able to handle rough weather. It has redundant communication systems. The use of blow gas will allow for greater control because we won't have to vent hydrogen as ballast. We have defrosting ability in our controls. Its machinery is made to operate at sub-freezing Arctic temperatures. It is the fastest airship ever built. We have a network of planes and ships in place that will respond immediately if we run into any problems. Our meteorological capacity is second to none.
I have the utmost confidence in you and the ship,
Heinz said with an unctuous smile, as his natural inclination to toady up to others came to the fore.
Good. I suggest we all get some rest before we reach Spitzbergen. We will refuel there and proceed to the pole.
The trip to Spitzbergen was uneventful. Contacted by radio, the refueling and resupply crew was ready and the airship was on its way within hours, heading north, past Franz Josef Archipelago. The dull gray sea below was speckled with pieces of floating ice. The chunks eventually graduated to large, irregular pancakes that joined to form ice broken here and there by dark black veins of open water. Near the pole, the ice became a vast, unbroken expanse. Although the bluish-white surface looked flat from 1,000 feet in the air, land explorers had learned the hard way that it was crisscrossed by ridges and hummocks.
Good news, Braun announced cheerfully. We are at 85 degrees north. We will make the pole soon. The weather conditions are ideal. No wind. Clear skies.
The anticipation grew, and even those who were off duty crowded into the control cabin and peered out the big windows as if they hoped to see a tall, striped shaft marking the spot at 90 degrees north. One observer called out,
Captain, I think I see something on the ice.
The captain peered through his binoculars at where the crewman was pointing.
Most interesting.
He handed the binoculars to Lutz.
It's a boat,
Lutz said after a moment. Braun nodded in agreement and directed the helmsman to change course.
What are you doing? Heinz said.
Braun handed him the binoculars. Look, he said, without elaboration. Heinz fumbled with his pince-nez and squinted through the glasses.
I see nothing, he said flatly.
Braun wasn't surprised at the answer. The man was as blind as a bat.
Nevertheless, there is a boat on the ice.
What would a boat be doing here?
Heinz said, eyes blinking rapidly.
I've heard of no other expeditions to the pole. I order you to return to our course.
On what grounds, Herr Heinz? The captain asked, elevating his chin even more. It was apparent from the coldness of his voice that he didn't care what the reply would be.
Our mission is to go to the North Pole, Heinz said.
Captain Braun glared at Heinz as if he was about to kick the little man out the door and watch his body fall onto the pack ice. Lutz recognized the dangerous mood the captain was in and intervened.
Herr Heinz, you are right, my friend. But I believe our charge was also to investigate any matter that may be of aid to us or the next expedition.
Braun added, In addition, we are duty-bound, no less than any ship that sails the sea, to help those who may be in distress.
If they see us, they will radio someone and jeopardize our mission, Heinz said, trying another tack.
They would have been blind and deaf not to have seen or heard us, said Braun.
And if they report our presence, so what? Our ship has no markings except for the name. Seeing he was defeated, Heinz slowly lit up a cigarette and conspicuously blew smoke in the air, daring the captain to stop him. The captain ignored the defiant gesture and gave the order to descend. The helmsman adjusted the controls, and the giant airship began its long, sloping glide down to the pack ice.